Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Please note, the following program was recorded before AFGE held national officer elections at its triennial convention. For more information on election results, please visit afge.org.
This week, AFGE National President John Gage will discuss the union's historic labor agreement with the Transportation Security Administration. And former Virginia Governor Tim Kaine will address the value of public service. But first, Pennsylvania AFL-CIO President Rick Bloomingdale joins us. President Bloomingdale, welcome back to the program.
Jason, it's always a pleasure.
So we are certainly in full election mode these days. What's happening in Pennsylvania with the AFL-CIO there getting ready for some of the elections?
Before we get into that, let me just offer my congratulations to AFGE and John Gage on that historic election for AFGE to be the collective bargaining agent for the Transportation Security Administration officers. I think that's going to really up the professionalism and make those folks proud of what they do, keeping us safe on the airlines, making sure that people travel safely and people get to their destinations as quickly as possible. The level of professionalism, I think, is absolutely going to be helped by the fact that they're going to be union and they don't have to worry every second about whether or not they can be fired for this or that. But that they're going to have dignity and a voice on the job. And I think that can't do anything but make our skies safer. So congratulations to John and John, President Gage, and AFGE on that historic victory. But on to Pennsylvania and politics. As you probably are aware, we passed one of the most restrictive voter ID laws in the land, requiring people to have some kind of state-issued ID. And, of course, it made it incredibly difficult. Even though the ID was free, many people who don't have an ID, of course, can't get to the PennDOT offices to get the ID, which means they had to pay money to do that. They had to get on a bus. They had to take a cab. They had to find some kind of transportation service. So basically what we had here was a poll tax. We were going to make it, Pennsylvania was going to make it hard for seniors, African Americans, minorities, Latinos, folks who live in cities, urban dwellers who may not need a car, want a car, may had to travel, spend money to go get this quote-unquote free ID, which, of course, if you didn't have your birth certificate, you had to pay the state $10 for a copy of your birth certificate. So basically, we were dealing with a hidden poll tax, which our majority leader, Mike Terzai, made it clear that this was about getting Mitt Romney elected president. And, you know, that happened in the South over 100 years to stay in power. They kept African Americans from voting, and they want to take back power here in Pennsylvania by keeping minorities, seniors, and African Americans from voting. Those folks who have historically supported progressive candidates, candidates who put Main Street above Wall Street, and the minions of Wall Street had decided that couldn't happen, and they, of course, passed this law. There's of course, been a court case. A suit was filed, and the hearing, the trial, actually, we had witnesses and everything last week. And our Secretary of State, who's responsible for the law, on the stand said she doesn't know what was in the law. The governor, when asked what the requirements were, was unable to answer what the requirements were. So basically they passed a law that not even our top elected officials who have some education, both of them are attorneys, were unaware of what the requirements were, what it was necessary to do a law, and then they expect the average citizen who is not used to reading legal documents to figure out how to get an ID. So we're hoping that Judge Simpson, who was the Commonwealth Court judge who heard the trial, would be able to make a decision by next week, and that he does the right thing, that he doesn't put on a partisan hat. He's a Republican, but he's a fair guy from decisions we've seen. And so we're hoping that he does the right thing and makes sure that Pennsylvania is about people having an opportunity to vote, not keeping people from voting.
That leads me to my next question, which is, what has the response been by Pennsylvanians on this issue? Are people supporting it? Are they against it? Which way are they going on this? What are people saying to you?
Well, you know, the polls are, of course, you know, when you just ask the question, do you think people should have an ID to vote? You know, that's people automatically think, oh, well, I've got to have an ID to get on a plane, or I got to have an ID to cash a check or to do this, you know. But those are all privileges. They're not fundamental rights. And, you know, and the state stipulated in their court case that there had never been a case of in-person voter fraud, which an ID is, that's what it's supposed to stop, right, is somebody walking in and trying to impersonate Rick Bloomingdale. Now, first of all, they'd have to learn how to forge my signature, and then they would have to look like me, because the judge of elections, who's been doing my polling place for 17 years, knows what the heck I look like. So they'd have to wear a Rick Bloomingdale mask and be able to forge my signature to be able to commit voter ID or voter fraud. So we have this absurd law, and when it's explained to the voters that this is what's wrong with your signature, most people say, well, that's stupid. That is an imposition to keeping people from voting. So when people learn about what it's really about, they're absolutely opposed. And, of course, you know, the folks we talk to are, you know, just appalled by what the attempt is. I mean, it's, you know, these guys got into power because there was low turnout in 2010. They've proposed ideas that the general public, the vast majority of voters oppose, restricting labor rights, cutting pensions, cutting education funding, all the things that have made America great. They want to turn back the dial, and people have said, well, wait a minute, so this is about staying in power by keeping people from voting. Once they learn that, they are absolutely opposed to this. But in the initial polls, when people say, should you have an ID to vote, people generally say, oh, yeah, that sounds reasonable. That's kind of the dichotomy of it. You've got people who, once they learn about it, think it's stupid. On their first blush, it sounds reasonable. But, of course, we know it's not. It's an attempt for people who've put forward failed ideas to stay in power.
What would the next steps be when you take a look at the issue based on what the judge might decide coming up here, you said, in the next week or so?
Yeah, well, of course, whatever happens, one side or the other will appeal it into the Supreme Court. But what we're doing is, you know, we are hoping for the best and preparing for the worst. Philadelphia, our labor council there under Pat Iding and Liz McElroy have moved ahead aggressively to work with African-American churches, the Committee of 70, which is a good government group, and put together a fairly impressive coalition of folks who are actively engaged in making sure not only that people are educated about this, but that people have some kind of means to go and get this photo, quote unquote, free photo ID. We've been working with Jack Shea in Allegheny County. Unfortunately, our resources are limited. So we'll go where we have some active staff and some active folks. I'd love to be doing this all over the state, but we're going to have to go where the union density is, where we can get the volunteers to help these seniors get this free photo, quote unquote, free photo ID right after they pay the $10 and the transportation fees to get to the local PennDOT office. And as part of it, take Pittsburgh, for example. City of Pittsburgh is within the county of Allegheny. Well, the only PennDOT office where you can get this quote-unquote free ID is in Monroeville, which is about, depending on traffic, 20 to 30 minutes by bus or car from downtown Pittsburgh. So if you live in the city of Pittsburgh and you don't have a car, you don't have a license because you don't need one, right? Good mass transit. You can get to work, walk to work, take the bus to work. They got a subway. The subway doesn't go out to the PennDOT office. Now, buses do, but that costs money. So now you're committed to see, if you're a senior citizen, getting up to the bus stop that takes you out to PennDOT, paying the bus fare. They haven't offered to do free buses for folks to get out there. So, again, we get back to the fact this is a poll tax. This is an attempt to keep people from voting. It has nothing to do with voter fraud. It is all about keeping people from voting. But we are preparing for the worst. We're doing as much as we can, helping and getting in coalitions with people who can, help people get these photo IDs in the event that, the courts leave the law in place.
Rick, are you finding some representatives from some of these groups that you mentioned that would be excluded, such as seniors and minorities? Are they standing up and fighting back and saying, hey, this isn't right, we want to be part of the process?
Oh, absolutely. There was a big rally on a Capitol steps a couple of weeks ago, organized by the NAACP and senior citizen groups and the labor movement. It had a good turnout, good press. Folks are outraged, and folks, young. It's real interesting to watch, like young African Americans who've heard the stories from their parents and grandparents who might have moved from the South about how it was always a chore to try to go vote until the Voting Rights Act of 1965 passed, and you actually had federal marshals ensuring that nobody tried to make somebody recite the Declaration of Independence from memory, or the kinds of things that they would do to keep people from voting, literacy tests, poll taxes, all those kind of things that were prevalent in the South. Again, by people who wanted to stay in power, and back then it was Democrats, right? The Dixiecrats were the ones who wanted to stay in power. African Americans, because Abe Lincoln had been the party of Lincoln had been responsible for abolition and freedom of the slaves, were voting Republican, and as a result, the party in power tried to keep people from voting, and that's now what's happening in Pennsylvania. When you have failed ideas like slavery, like anti-unionism, like trying to take cuts in education and keep people from going to college by cutting higher education. Whenever you have failed ideas, the way to keep those ideas going is not to present them to the general public and hope to convince them. It's to try to keep people from voting. And that's exactly what Terzai and his crowd have tried to do, is to keep people from going to the polls. But it's been, like I said, an interesting watching young African Americans hear these stories. Now they are living these stories. Young guy just out of high school doesn't need to drive, right? Or young woman right out of high school doesn't need to drive in Philadelphia because they got good mass transit, goes to work in Philadelphia, now is finding the very same things that his parents or grandparents faced, or her grandparents faced, being trying to be perpetrated on them, trying to keep them from voting because they tend to vote for the party, for President Obama, who, of course, is our first African-American president.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our conversation with Pennsylvania AFL-CIO President Rick Bloomingdale.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number from MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're continuing with Rick Bloomingdale, the president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Rick, before the break, we touched a lot on the voter ID law in Pennsylvania, which has stirred up quite a controversy. But of course, we're going into a highly contested presidential election between the GOP presumptive nominee Mitt Romney and, of course, President Obama. How do you see that issue playing out? What do you think is going to be the key focus come Election Day?
Well, of course, the people are worried about the economy. They've started to figure out that a guy who won't show his tax returns or made money by closing plants and sending jobs overseas is probably not the guy who is going to get the economy moving. And, it's going to be up to us to educate our members and talk to our members about the fact that President Obama has continued to try to get this country moving again, but you have a party in power that has decided that it's more important to sink the ship to get at the captain, and has been as obstructionist as they could be. And it, to me, it is shocking and actually a little disappointing that you have a leader like Mitch McConnell, who has said that his job is to make Barack Obama a one-term president. Rather than, I would have thought the job of the United States Senate and the United States Congress was to get America back to work, that their job was not a political job, but was a governing job, that it wasn't about rewarding their rich friends, it was about building the middle class. And they have absolutely, you know, I used to believe that most people actually wanted America to do better. A guy like Mitch McConnell, I don't think he does. I think he would drive this country into the ground in order to get President Obama. And people may say, well, why is that? That doesn't even make sense. But you got to remember, the Republicans have gone from being the party of small business and folks who just want government to get out of the way to realizing that government can put billions of dollars into their friends' pockets, that government, through its policies, can make sure that Wall Street gets richer and that Americans get poorer. They have absolutely figured out that their masters on Wall Street are the ones who need to be rewarded. So, and that they can do that by trying to privatize Social Security. They love the fact that defined benefit plans are disappearing and that 401ks are becoming the standard, because Wall Street makes money off of 401ks. They don't make money off defined benefit plans. They make money off of managing your money. And one of the greatest lines in movie history is in the movie Trading Places, where Eddie Murphy is learning what the brokers Duke and Duke do. And after it's explained to him, he says, well, you all are nothing but a couple of bookies. You make money whether people win or lose. And they looked at each other, of course, but that's what it is. Wall Street makes money. If your 401k becomes a 201k and you lost half your money, you're going to panic and move that money. The minute you make choices, Wall Street's making money off your move. They make money whether you win or lose. And they figured when they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, President Clinton signing it, you know, Democrats voted for it, thought that the bankers had learned their lesson. Of course, you know, no banker ever learned their lesson. They need to be regulated. Otherwise, they would run off with the money and do whatever they needed to do. But, you know, they drove within. Glass-Steagall had protected this country from greedy bankers for 50 years. Within 7 years of the repeal of Glass-Steagall, the bankers had done exactly what the smart folks who passed Glass-Steagall knew that they would do. They would get greedy, and they would make stupid decisions, and they would nearly bankrupt this country. And now we have a populace that is trying to make a decision on who to support in this election. Are you going to support the guy who's in the pocket of Wall Street? Or are you going to support the guy whose agenda has been to build the middle class, but has been obstructed by Congress? And I think the people in Pennsylvania are going to make the right decision, and they're going to reelect President Obama for a second term in the White House to keep fighting for us. And hopefully Congress wakes up and understands that their job is to build the middle class, not to make Wall Street richer.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Rick Bloomingdale, the president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Rick, in order to jumpstart the economy, what kind of jobs do you think need to be created in this country?
Well, I think manufacturing and construction, all those jobs lead to other jobs, right? You got to have that base. And by the way, you know, people always say, well, manufacturing, those are good-paying jobs. They're only good-paying because they're union jobs. When they were not union jobs, they weren't good-paying, right? They organized, and then people started asking the companies to share the profits with not only the shareholders but the workers as well. That's what unions do. We push back, and we say, give us, you know, our share of our productivity. So manufacturing, construction, which is heavily unionized, those folks make sure that some of the money gets into their pockets. And then what do they do with it? As middle class folks, we don't buy three or four homes in Paris or the Caymans or whatever. We tend to buy a car or refrigerator or a house. That puts other people to work, right? That puts that mortgage person to work in the bank when you buy that house. So then that person goes and buys a new car because they sold a couple of houses. And then the auto worker who's at work because that person bought the car goes out and buys a refrigerator, which, you know, puts that person to work. It's John Kennedy's "The Rising Tide Lifts All Boats." But if you don't, if you're not making stuff, if you're not at that very the base of the economy and building things up, we can't be a service economy. If people aren't paying taxes, how are you going to be able to pay teachers? If somebody's making $8 at Walmart, how is that person ever going to? How are we ever going to have enough of a tax base to get good teachers? You got to have that person making the $20 or $30 an hour, who's paying his fair share, unlike the Republican nominee Mitt Romney, who seems to pay less than his fair share after this country has made sure he had roads and bridges and all those things and education for his workers so that his company could grow. But everybody pays their fair share, but there's not enough of a share if you're not making a good wage. Can't sustain an economy on service industries. At some point, Medicare is not going to pay for every orderly to take care of old people. There's just not enough money there because there's not enough pay. So now we got the downward spiral rather than the upward, the rising tide. We got the lowering tide that's sinking all the boats or stranding all the boats. And we need to get back to that manufacturing, construction, making stuff base. You know, people want to buy made in America. We need to let them know that these companies know there's a market for made in America and get this economy going again.
Rick, I want to shift gears for just a minute and get your thoughts on some key House races that you've got your eye on in Pennsylvania. What are you paying attention to there?
Well, we've got for Congress, we got some really interesting races. We think in the 8th District of Pennsylvania, which is over in Bucks County, we got a guy who back in the Bush days had been a fairly moderate Republican, has moved way to the right. We got a great candidate in Kathy Buchvar, who, you know, Bucks County is a moderate. It's a little bit more Republican than Democrat, but they're moderate Republicans, Republicans who believe that the middle class should be helped, not hurt. We got a great candidate there, Kathy Buchvar. We got a rematch in the 6th Congressional District with Manion Trivedi running an Iraqi war vet, a doctor who served his country and now is running for Congress in the 6th District, which is Berks County and Redding and those areas. And we got one of my favorite races. I mean, people don't know that think it's much of a shot, but because the way they redrew the districts to protect incumbents. We got the 11th Congressional District. Lou Barletta, who has been as about as anti-worker as you can get. We got a young activist, or not a middle-aged, an activist, who's running, a good guy, a lawyer who's been fighting the good fight, took on State House midnight pay raises. He had this big pink pig he took all over the state of Pennsylvania. He's a lawyer. He's a very, very bright guy running against Lou Barletta in the 11th District. And Gene Stilp is just such a great activist that I think he's just going to work his tail off to bring the issues to the people. And I'm hoping that Gene, because he's seen as an activist, he's having trouble raising money. And, you know, we need to make sure that that Gene gets the money he needs to run a credible campaign. So those are probably the three major races, or the two major races and the one fun race, if I can put it. And, of course, the 12th Congressional District, where Mark Kritz beat the Jason Altmaier in the primary, and the way they drew the districts through two Ds together. Mark has been, in his short time, he took Congressman Murtha's place, in his short time in office, has just been a stand-up guy for workers throughout the 12th District. And we're working hard. A lot of retired steelworkers and steelworkers in that district. We're working hard to make sure that Mark Kritz gets another turn in Congress to keep fighting for workers.
Rick, as we close out here, what kind of events or activities do you have planned there at the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO to get involved in some of these races and show your support for the candidates?
Well, we will be doing, of course, our 10-point program, and we're, you know, a lot of unions, I hope, will be sending us relief staff to help us put that into place. Obviously, we'll be doing the walks and the phone banks. But before we wrap up, let me just give a plug. We're having this big rally on the 11th, Workers Stand for America. Friday night, we're going to be signing a Workers' Bill of Rights that asks that the parties in Congress and our country dedicate themselves to the fact that people should have health care, pensions, a voice at work, the right to organize, a second Bill of Rights that's focused on economic issues and worker issues. And we'll be signing that Friday night, and then on Saturday, we'll be having we're going to do that in front of Independence Hall. And then Saturday, there's a huge rally in support of that Workers' Bill of Rights where people will be able to sign it there. We're expecting anywhere from, thousands of people in Philadelphia at 11 o'clock in front of the Art Museum, which most people remember from the movies as the steps that Rocky ran up, but it's called Eakins Oval. At 11 o'clock, it's going to be huge. We got hundreds and hundreds of buses have already scheduled to come in. We got, of course, thousands of workers in the southeastern Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey who are coming over. It's going to be a great day. Rich Trumka is going to be speaking. Sean McGarvey, the president of the building trades, will be speaking. We're going to have Bob Casey, our senator, who's up for re-election this year. Let's not forget that's going to be a race we have to fight hard. The Republican is self-funding himself. He's writing himself a check for $20 million. But the 11th is going to be a huge day to send a message to all these politicians. Start standing up for workers. That's what this is about. America needs to stand up for its workers. And the way to do that is to encourage unionization, fair pay, pensions, and health care. Those are the bedrocks that lift this country up. So the 11th is a big kickoff. We're viewing that as a kickoff for really getting engaged in the political process, which will then lead us into getting involved in the legislative process. So the 11th, everybody should be there.
Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Rick, it is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for your time, and good luck with your event coming up here soon.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason. It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE National President John Gage will discuss the union's historic labor contract with the Transportation Security Administration.
I just earned my degree at Grantham University, and now I'm on my way to a promotion.
Grantham University?
The affordable online classes fit my schedule. Plus, I earn college credit for work experience.
How can I fast-track my degree at Grantham University?
Go to fasttrackedu.com.
Fasttrackedu.com?
Yes, fasttrackedu.com. If you're an AFGE member, you qualify for a tuition discount. Check out Grantham University today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by John Gage, AFGE National President. President Gage, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jason.
So the big news, of course, coming out of AFGE is the labor agreement with the Transportation Security Administration for the nation's 45,000 transportation security officers. You, of course, were the lead negotiator on that team. Tell us about the contract, what's in it, and what it means for TSOs.
Yeah, it was, first of all, it was a struggle to get. We finalized it, I think, Thursday morning at 3:30 a.m., where the chief negotiator for TSA, Bob Ball, who runs the airport at Detroit, and I signed agreements on 15 of the bargainable subjects. But I think that... Well, first of all, for AFG, I think this was a culmination of a true labor of love. We've been fighting, first of all, to federalize the screeners and to than to get them any kind of rights, finally fighting and winning to allow them to have a union and a true voice at work. And we've been doing this for 10 years now, and this contract is kind of the exclamation point on a tremendous effort by our whole union, a sacrifice by our whole union, too. So we're quite proud of it. Now, what's in the contract, I think we bettered the working day life of every TSO in every area. First of all, the universally despised pass system, that is how they get their so-called pay for performance. But the way it was set up was they would have one day of testing, and tests that had some definite problems with along with them. And that was worth 60% of their yearly pay raise. Their actual job performance over the rest of the year was worth only 40. So if you kind of got a average score on the test, you were pretty well shot for the year for the pay raise, and that was definitely a morale killer. We were successful in separating certification, the testing, from employee performance management. There'll still be a certification test, but it'll be a pass-fail on whether the employee has the skills to be a screener. And I think there's going to be real changes in that certification test, too. But they will be evaluated over the year on their performance, which is much fairer to determine their pay raise. So that was a very large pickup there. Also, on some tangible areas, for instance, uniforms, we doubled the allowance for their uniforms. We really made strong arguments that if management wanted to have a command presence, as they term it, of TSOs at the work site, well, they just had to put more of an investment into these really, well, I don't want to denigrate the uniforms, but they're pretty bad. So what we did was each year, each TSO will get an allotment of 3 pair of pants, 3 shirts that will not come out of their allowance. That will be given to each TSO. That wasn't done in the past at all. Now their allotment will be able to buy different combinations. And one of the big things about this was shorts. The TSA refused to let TSOs wear shorts, even in places like Puerto Rico or Miami, where everyone in the airport is in shorts. So we cured that, and TSOs will be allowed to wear shorts on hot days. And can't believe what a what a victory that was. But so they will have more money in their personal allowance to buy even shoes. So we cracked that. They had to wear these cloggy shoes, and we were successful in getting 6 new kinds of shoes, athletic type shoes, that I think will go a long way for TSA in the convenience and comfort area. So on that, it was definitely a strong pickup. We also put in across the board processes for bidding on shifts and bidding on annual leave, and all done by seniority. Matter of fact, one thing we did was that we really put in some strong controls that management wouldn't be able just to pick somebody and put them in a cushy job. It would lead to a promotion. I mean, we really, in the four corners of this agreement, seniority really will govern so that it'll just be a fair selection for some of these assignments. A couple of things were not settled. We agreed to disagree on parking. It wasn't really a disagreement. We came in very strong to get relief for parking for TSOs. I mean, it's really so unfair, not just what they have to pay, but, you know, they're forced to park at the airport, and many of the lots were in the, you know, farthest part of public parking in the airports. And we had a real problem with that, especially with some vendors at the airport had much better parking. So management alleged that, well, we have to do a survey first to the airports, that they avowed that they were with us to reduce costs and to generally better TSA parking conveniences and arrangements. So we said, I'll tell you what we do. We'll put this in for arbitration, and in the meantime, keep bargaining. And management has given us some assurances that this thing will be settled before it actually goes to arbitration. So we use some creativity to make the final agreement. Now we're I'm in Las Vegas right now. We are at the AFG convention, which starts on Sunday. The TSOs representing our 52, I believe, locals we have set up around the country will be here, and we will talk around the contract. And also, you know, the big thing that was done outside the contract, let me mention this. Mr. Pistol and I had a negotiation separate from the contract because in their wisdom, they said that grievance and arbitration was not part of collective bargaining, which is rather novel. And we just weren't going to stand for that. So we used virtually every pressure we could to finally get a negotiation mediated by Ivan Fong, who is the general counsel of the Department of Homeland Security. He works for Secretary Napolitano. And we went around and around for about 3 months and finally inked an agreement giving full MSPB rights, Merit System Protection Board rights, on suspensions of 14 days and over to TSOs, and also expedited arbitration for other disciplines and worksite disputes. We're pretty happy with that. That was something that we promised during the campaign to, first of all, kill PASS, and we think we did. That's the performance management thing. And also to provide a legitimate independent third party, not just a manager, to adjudicate worksite disputes. So you package it all together, the arbitration, the shift bidding, the new leave rules, the pass, the, you know, I think it's a very well-rounded contract. I'm very proud of the TSOs. We had 10 TSOs on our bargaining team from all around the country, and big airports, small airports, and they really stuck together, and then we came out of it, I think, with a contract that we're very proud to take to the TSOs around the country for a ratification vote.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE National President John Gage. President Gage, on the idea of some of these TSOs being a part of the bargaining team, how important was it to have the input of the workforce for them to tell you this is what we want and then for you to go in there and be able to get it?
No, it was critically important. That's one reason I served on this bargaining team. I mean, I had, during the campaign, talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of TSOs, and really they taught me their business, what was happening at the checkpoints and in the baggage areas across the country. And but having them there to really hear what was going on, to craft language, and then to test the language, you know, against the experiences of the TSOs was just critical. We couldn't have done it without it.
For some of our listeners who might not be as familiar with this process, can you take us through quickly what it's like to go into a negotiation, bargain these certain articles? Of course, you had mentioned a couple of marathon sessions taking you into the wee hours of the morning. What is all that like?
Well, it was different and tougher than probably any negotiation I've been in, because first of all, we even the time frames for the negotiation was all set by management. There was no underpinning of Title V or the Civil Service Reform Act or Fair Labor Standards Act or anything. When TSA was set up, it was set up notwithstanding any other law. So we were there without the usual backdrop of at least a law to support things like due process or you know, the 40-hour work week, basic things like that. So it was pretty difficult. Plus, we did it at the headquarters of the Federal Conciliation Mediation Service. FMCS, it is, Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service, and there was a federal mediator there during the whole during the whole process. The last days were done at the National Mediation Board headquarters, it was a sacrifice. Not a lot of activities for the bargaining team during the summer. It was all day, every day. It was tempers flaring, but really what we had to win by argument. We had to win by, facts. We had to win by showing that this was a better idea of the union's proposals, and that it would go a long way to improving the morale of TSOs, and to provide them a real meaningful voice at work that I think has really been absent in the 10 years since TSA has been established. So it was different, and I'm very glad it's over.
Well, it's certainly a tremendous victory for the TSOs and for all of AFGE, something that everyone can be very, very proud of. Shifting gears here for a minute, of course, earlier this summer you did announce your decision to not seek re-election as AFGE national president. Tell us a little bit about what went into your decision and what you're planning to do next with your time.
Well, three more years just sounded like a long time. I still live in Baltimore. I have a growing family with grandkids and I just thought that I would like to do something else. I may go back to my local. I may go just into local building, and that's the part of the business I always really liked, working with actual members. So I will definitely stay involved in the labor movement. I've three terms as president, there hasn't been a lot of easy lifting. Even after President Obama was elected, the attacks on federal employees have just been like a hit parade, one after another, starting with President Bush and Clay Johnson, his OMB guy, and just the move to contract out, the move to, cut within grades, to put in pay for performance, just a laundry list of attacks on federal employees, and especially on the unions. I mean, there have been so many initiatives coming out of the last administration and the last Congress, as well as this Congress, just to gut union rights and employee rights in the federal sector, very similar to what's happening in some of the states like Wisconsin and Ohio. So it has been a tough road for federal employees. I think we've done really a super job in just fighting every fight and meeting these attacks head on and trying to expose them for what they are. Even under President Obama, it's been tough. I thought that that we would get a lot of secondary issues taken care of. For instance, we're having correctional officers stabbed, and we wanted to get stab-proof vests and pepper spray, and just ran into roadblocks in this administration on even getting those type of things. So there's been a lot of little things that have been kind of irritating, and of course there's the big things. We didn't exactly weren't given a spot at the table when the decisions were made to freeze federal pay, and which I have still a real problem with. I just wish the administration would stop this schizophrenic bouncing back and forth between deficit reduction and stimulus. I really think that when the goal is jobs, and when you start attacking the jobs we have through pay freezes, layoffs, cuts, when you're in this recession, please stop digging. And it's a little different than the commercial that's on TV, because I think this quest on the deficit has really made this recession much tougher and much longer. But I would have liked that AFG would have been consulted more on issues like that. So it's you know, the fight continues. The future is, I hate to say it's bleak, but there's some huge decisions that are going to be made on, you know, the Bush taxes, the payroll tax, the Medicare sequestration is just going to be huge for federal employees, and looks like it's a negative outcome no matter which way it goes. So it's, you know, the Congress just spitting out pretty much idiotic proposals, cut 10%, no, cut 20%, you know, of people in these programs. And they're really, I think, a tax not just on federal employees, but on the basic program that our people work. So I don't see a lot of positive things in the future. Of course, for federal employees, I think that you might say, well, President Obama wasn't all we thought he was. You know, when he came in, he did upgrade hiring in places that were really desperate, you know, Social Security, VA, and that was really a good thing. And so I don't mean to say that President Obama was all bad for federal employees. That's not the case at all. But I think now when you look at it, it's what President Obama has done compared to what the other people, the other guy, is offering for federal employees. And I think every federal employee has to stand up and do their part in this campaign, not just from the president, not just for the presidency, but also down the line in Senate and House races.
President Gage, as you look back on your career as the AFGE national president, and we close out the interview here, what is your most proudest accomplishment?
Oh, I don't know. I have a couple of them. You know, some of the big ones, you know, taking down NSPS, the National Security Personnel System, and DOD, wasn't a small undertaking for AFGE, and it was us and pretty much us alone who did take that down. That's certainly one. I'm proud of what I did on some internal things too. You know, providing more professional representation for federal workers. We've quadrupled the number of attorneys and professional representatives on our staff across the board. I think that's a real boon to membership. And of course, on membership, since I've been president, I think we put on about 75,000 new members, which is, you know, we're the leader in the AFL on growth, and I'm very proud of that. I'm also proud of a lot of the new staffers that we've hired, like you, Jason.
Well, thank you.
you know, I think we really have renovated our staff, and it's young, aggressive, and I think ready for the battles that are coming up.
John Gage, AFGE National President. President Gage, it is always a pleasure to have you on the program, and we look forward to talking with you again in the future, and thank you for everything that you've done at AFGE, your leadership and your dedication to the labor movement.
All right, thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, former Virginia Governor and U.S. Senate candidate Tim Kaine will address the value of federal service.
I just earned my degree at Grantham University, and now I'm on my way to a promotion.
Grantham University?
The affordable online classes fit my schedule, plus I earn college credit for work experience.
How can I fast-track my degree at Grantham University?
Go to fasttrackedu.com.
Fasttrackedu.com?
Yes, fasttrackedu.com. If you're an AFGE member, you qualify for a tuition discount. Check out Grantham University today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Here with Governor Tim Kaine, who is on the U.S. Senate campaign trail. Governor, as you make your way around the state, what are the voters here in Virginia telling you in terms of the role of government, federal employees, and public service?
I find a good understanding in Virginia of our connection to the federal economy. So, you know, you see things happening in other states where there's a penchant to bash, you know, public employees. I don't see that among the Virginia citizens. Virginia citizens understand our connection to the federal economy. They generally have close connections with people who they might be, you know, working as a DOD civilian at Langley Air Force Base, or they might be an EPA employee who lives in Northern Virginia and works downtown. Virginians tend to have close connections, and I think they have a balanced understanding of the responsibilities and work that federal employees do.
Do you think that understanding comes from the fact that there are so many retired and active federal employees in this area?
Yes. It would be very hard to find a Virginian who didn't have a direct family or neighborly connection with a federal employee. In Northern Virginia, certainly. In Hampton Roads, I mean, the two largest regions in Virginia, it's equally the case. And then throughout the Commonwealth, you know, I think people have that understanding too.
On day one of being in office, what would your top priority be?
Well, look, it's going to be about jobs. It's going to be about continuing to grow the economy, using some Virginia lessons. There are growth strategies that can enable us to build the economy right away. Investments in infrastructure, leveling the playing field for the true job creators, who are the small businesses and startups, and then talent strategies. You know, I'm a huge believer that if you get education, workforce development, and other talent strategies right, that's your best path to economic growth. So, you know, I'll be working with others to take an economy that is now growing, but hopefully work to accelerate the growth rate.
Governor, lastly, here in the town forum tonight, the idea of sequestration was brought up. What are your thoughts on that?
A lot of questions about sequestration, and they have an acuteness in Virginia that may even be sharper than in other states. We ought to make a fundamental choice as a nation about how we deal with budgets and our deficit. One school of thought, which is the Grover Norquist school, is that you deal with a deficit 100% through cutting. If you cut expenditures only, you're making a huge mistake. You're going to devastate the economy. You're going to hurt key priorities, and you're going to particularly hurt the Virginia economy. The better way to deal with sequestration is to find a deal that sure makes some cuts and finds some savings, but also puts more revenue into the federal budget. And if you find that balanced approach, then, you know, we will fix our deficit situation the right way without devastating the economy. We'll save jobs by doing it.
Former Virginia Governor Tim Kaine, thank you so much for your time today.
You bet, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you to our guest this week, Pennsylvania AFL-CIO President Rick Bloomingdale, AFGE National President John Gage, and former Virginia Governor Tim Kaine. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.